I felt really fine about this talk until this morning. And then, like Karen said, it was like Jesus preached this morning. And when John spoke, it was just so incredible that I started to panic. And so I'm not panicking. I'm just trusting that the thing that God says about how his power shows up best in weak people is going to happen tonight. Caroline and I went on a leadership course this week. It was really, really good. And one of the things he challenged us to do as teachers was to work without technology all week. So I'm starting my week today. I've got no technology and it feels a bit scary because I've just got loads of writing. So I really apologise to people who are kinesthetic learners like me because I find it really hard to listen to someone. But I will try my best to make it interesting. I wear passion around my neck all the time. I've got this necklace, lovely necklace that Jane Taylor made for me for my 40th birthday. And it didn't turn out how Nick wanted it, which was great big dog tags. I think I was really grateful that Jane put her artistic input into something. But one of the words, I've got a word for each of my children. And one of the words for Indy is passion. Mainly because, I'm just going to leave it there. So I have passion around my neck. And Katie was very, very kind. She said to me, I really want you to do this talk because when I think of passion, I think of you, or something like really nice like that. Buttering me up. Basically, there was no one else to do it, was there? But actually, when Katie asked me to do this, I have to really openly admit that I was not feeling at all passionate because I felt really, really tired. And I have felt really tired this whole term. And so it was actually a real blessing because when Katie asked me to do it, I probably felt really quite low. And it was really good to write this talk. I wrote it on a snow day when Lige had a day off and so did I. And the others were at school. And he was doing his homework and I was doing this. And it was really amazing because I felt like God gave me that little bit of time when I don't ever have time. And it really reminded me that actually when we don't feel passionate, we need to get back to God's word and look at the Bible. And that's what I did on that day. And I feel slightly more passionate than I did before. So I just wanted to start off by telling you this game that our family play, mainly in the car to stop arguments. It's a game called Would You Rather. So they get quite extreme sometimes, our Would You Rathers. I won't go into some of them. But the other day when we were on the way to the cinema to see the best film that's ever happened called The Greatest Showman. Put your hand up if you've seen that. Yes. Basically, we're on the way to that film. Joey said in the car, I can remember exactly where we were by the traffic lights, would you rather take a tablet so you never had to eat again or take a tablet so you never had to poo again? And that we had to think about this for quite a while because I have to say, if you think about that, actually doing a number two is quite satisfying sometimes, isn't it? But it did really make me think that I absolutely feel passionately about food. I love cooking food. I really love eating food. And I even like thinking about food. I found it really hard to, Joey and I and Nick are off biscuits and chocolates for Lent. And it's been so hard to be off. I cannot wait till next week. And so basically my thing was, I feel passionate about food. Now, I wondered what immediately springs into your mind when I ask you what you're passionate about. And I want you to be really honest. And Karen and Heps are going to run around with some pens and post-it notes. And in a minute when you've got them, I'm just going to ask you for 30 seconds just to write down as many things as you can that you feel passionate about. You're not allowed to start the timer yet, Tom, until they've all got their resources ready. Yes, it is the teacher mode. Sorry, I should have had them ready for the lesson, shouldn't I? Is everybody ready? Okay, go with the timer, Tom. This adds to the pressure. Yeah, hopefully the sound's on. dibs on those pens. That's the most annoying thing, isn't it, when you don't get any pens out with the lids on. Okay, I was going to like collect them up and then read them out, but can some people just shout out? Thank you. Shoes and handbags, anything else? Family? Pardon? Friends? Holidays? Children? Music, thank you. Just to name but a few. So we are passionate about lots of things, aren't we? But I just wonder, if we were really honest, whether Jesus featured on that list. And if he did feature on that list, how high up on that list Jesus was. Because if I was really honest, actually, when I did it, I didn't put God at the top of my list. And the person in our reading tonight, the lady in this story, Mary, she would definitely have put Jesus at the top of her list because she was completely passionate about him. And a lot of these ideas that I'm talking about tonight come from this book called Living from the Unseen, which Katie Powney recommended to me. I haven't read it. But I shouldn't have said that, should I? But apparently it's very good. Really what I want to talk about tonight is three things. One of them is, what does being passionate for Jesus look like? The second thing is, what can we learn from Mary's example in the story? And the third one is, what response can we give? So the first one, what does being passionate for Jesus look like? Now, when I looked up the word passion in the dictionary, it talks about strong feelings. And in the Cambridge Dictionary, it says that passion is a powerful feeling. And it goes on about the word powerful. The first thing I think about when I think about feelings is that they come and they go. So one day we might be feeling passionate about eating porridge for your breakfast or listening to a certain CD in the car or doing exercise every day or being kind to someone who's being really annoying. But the next day we might not feel like it. So how can we stay passionate about Jesus and what does that look like? I didn't know Karen was going to be here tonight, but I wrote you down because basically, the obvious answer, isn't it, is that you need to spend time with someone and have a relationship with them. And I was just going to use Karen as my illustration because that it's like that in friendship, isn't it, as well? And I know from Karen that she's not a fluffy texter. So I know that because she's my friend. But if I didn't know that, I could be really offended by Karen's texts because she never kisses on the end. And she just basically goes straight to the point. She'll just say, yeah, okay, that's fine. But she doesn't ever fluff around it. But because she's a really good friend of mine, I know that about her. I'm not offended by that because I have a relationship with Karen and I know that's just how she texts. But that's because I've spent time with her and she's amazing in loads of other ways. She's a brilliant friend. But you're like that, aren't you? You need to fluff them up, definitely. It's not your love language, so it's okay. So it's a bit like that with Jesus, that we need to not worry about texting, but we need to have such a friendship with him that we know how to interpret him, that we need to listen to his voice and follow his calling and know that he says things in love and know that we are accepted and that we're rooted in him. So that even in the dry seasons, in the winter when it's hard and things find like they're not happening, feel like they're not happening, we still know that stuff is happening and that God's still loving us and that he wants the best for us. And it's just like a plant that might seem dead in the winter, but underneath there's loads of stuff going on and it's preparing to blossom. So before every blessing, I think there comes a time of preparation so that we can grow and mature. And I really remember a time of this when I was a lot younger and I was single. I'm sure Simon will remember this time when I kept breaking up with Mark and he was on the other end of it. And I remember finding it really, really hard to be single for years. And I used to cry about it so much and struggle with it. But actually, it was probably the most amazing time that I had with God because I relied on him so much and definitely grew and mature in that time. So the key to preparation and passion is intimacy with Jesus, spending time thinking about God and asking ourselves, what do I think about God? What's my personal revelation of God for my life? And how do I perceive him? How do I see him? Because how we see him affects how we will pray. It affects how we minister to other people, and it affects who we are. In Matthew 16, verse 13, Jesus asks Peter, what about you? Who do you say I am? And he's not asking Peter that because Peter doesn't know who he is and he doesn't know his own identity, but he's asking Peter because he wants to know where his passion is, where his heart is. He knows that if Peter has the right picture of him, it will lead to destiny and revelation. So Peter responds, doesn't he, saying, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And then Jesus says, you are upon this rock, I will build my church. So he wants to build on the revelation for who he is for us. He knows that when we say who he is, what our declaration is what our proclamation will be. For example, if we see God as a provider, we'll trust him as one. And that's what our family have had to do over the last 2 years. If we see God as a healer, we'll believe that he can do it. We need to have the right perceptions and understanding of God to know who he is. And these only come with spending time with him. So if you feel like you're in a time of drought or difficulty or dryness, I would be really encouraged because I think it's a time of preparation, and hold on to the fact that God uses times of preparation to grow and mature us, just like the plants before the time of blessing and blossom. And a really amazing verse which I've always held on to for that is in Philippians 1 verse 6. I'm sure that God, who began the good work within you, will keep right on helping you grow in his grace until his task within you is finally finished on that day when Jesus Christ returns. So during these times, more than any others, we need to position ourselves in a place where we can hear from God and see what God's doing. When God asks us, what do you see? What does he mean? To see in Hebrew, I think this is right, Chris. I'll say it confidently. It might be Greek. But is that the same thing? It means to perceive, to gaze, to behold, to dream, to prophesy, to look into, to scan, vision and favour. So in Jeremiah, God asks Jeremiah, what do you see? And Jeremiah replies in verse 11, I see a branch from an almond tree. That almond tree is apparently like the what comes out first in late winter, early spring. It's the first thing to blossom. So Jeremiah could see what was coming spiritually because he was in relationship with God. He was passionate about hearing from him and looking forward to what he was going to do. And he had positioned himself in a place where he could see and perceive what God was doing. And that is exactly what Mary did in this passage. So what can we learn from her example? Well, Mary could perceive or see what Jesus was doing because she had spent time with him. She had had preparation time before she had this encounter with Jesus. So we know, don't we, that Mary was the brother of Lazarus and the sister of Martha. I'll never forget the talk that I did on Lazarus when Lois went to hospital afterwards. From the stink bomb, it's got really bad trauma memories for me. But she had seen amazing things that Jesus had done. So she'd seen that her brother had been healed by Jesus after 3 days. And she had been the one who had sat at Jesus' feet while her sister Martha had scurried around doing the housework and being busy. And actually spending that time with Jesus had changed her perception of him. She knew that being passionate about Jesus meant spending time with him. Now, time is a really, really hard thing, isn't it? I found I have less time probably now than I think I've ever had in my whole life. And we use time as an excuse a lot of the time. And I read a magazine article the other day when I had a bit of time on the toilet. And it was from OK Magazine. It's really scary. It really challenged me, actually, about how I spend my time. It says, could you break up with your phone? Are you addicted to your phone? The average adult checks their phone up to 200 times a day. The statistics are staggering. Most of us spend at least 24 hours a week online. While according to Ofcom, 70% of 24-year-olds, prefer texting to talking. Not only that, but a recent study by a mobile firm has reported that 11% of people check their phones during a funeral. A whopping 72% have taken their handset to the toilet. Yeah, I mean, whatever. But this is really scary. Even more alarmingly, 7% of adults have confessed to checking their phone during sex. But how scary is that, really? That I'm not that last one, but I don't even want to think about that. But the fact that people have got time to check their phone 200 times a day, but are we checking in with, like, God that many times a day in prayer? I don't know. That's really challenging, isn't it? But Mary was somebody who had spent time with Jesus. And how she saw him, how she perceived him, affected her whole life. So if we just look at the passage for a minute, just to compare the two characters in it, the main ones, Mary and Judas. There's Mary who loved Jesus and she was in relationship with him, had a relationship with him. And Judas, who'd become blinded to what Jesus was trying to do, and he couldn't see him. So Mary was generous, opposed to Judas, being greedy. So Mary spent all she had on that one jar of perfume. It says, doesn't it, in the Bible, they think that was about a year's wages that she spent on that one act, which is why everyone was so horrified that she'd done it. She did something that was radical and generous. And Jesus in the verse says rightly that this woman's deeds will be remembered. Judas was greedy for money. He was in charge of the disciples' funds. He was the treasurer and he wanted an important role in Jesus' government. So when Jesus praised Mary for pouring the perfume, Judas was outraged and he started to realize that this new kingdom that Jesus was building was not about money and power, but it was spiritual. And he lost his passion further and his desire for the spiritual. And that was soon after that is when he betrayed Jesus for money. Mary was selfless as opposed to Judas was selfish. So Mary had spent time with Jesus. She knew each moment with him was special. She didn't care what others thought of her, but was willing to give up everything for him. Judas only thought of himself, his needs, his wants, and his desires, which were for material things, not for spiritual things. And I wonder how often we are like that, wanting material things and not spiritual. And Mary was had a precious act of worship, whereas Judas had the act of betrayal. So Mary did what she did because she was passionate and she wanted to respond and she wanted to act. In verse 6, it says she was willing to sacrifice what was most precious. She worshipped Jesus. Judas also responded, but he responded without relationship and without passion. So he responded with his act of betrayal. And it says in verse 11 that he began looking for the right time to betray Jesus. So number 3 was, what response can we give? If we think about passion, and if we go back to the definition about it being a powerful feeling, I think if something's really powerful, that it demands a powerful response. And it demands a response of some sort. And I just thought about, I was trying to think, I was talking to my kids about something that they might feel they want a response for. We're just thinking about McDonald's. So in McDonald's, you go to McDonald's, right, because you want hot, salty, beautiful, golden, crunchy chips, yeah? But if you go to McDonald's and you get served like floppy, cold, really gross, like fat-coated chips, you'd demand a response from that, wouldn't you? That's not just me. You'd take them back, yeah? Because nobody wants to eat cold chips. McDonald's chips, you can taste the calories if they're cold, not if they're hot. So I would never sit and eat cold chips. I'd take them back, and they always give you really amazing ones. The students in Florida, America, they demand a response. They want a response to the fact that their friends got gunned down. And I don't know if you saw on the news yesterday, but there was an incredible demonstration in Washington, even though Trump was off playing golf in Florida or somewhere, wasn't he? There was a march for our lives, and there was hundreds of thousands of people that marched to say we are demanding a change to the gun laws and an end to the violence. And I just watched a clip on YouTube of Yolanda King, who's the granddaughter of Martin Luther Jr. And she was saying, I have a dream, enough is enough. It was really powerful. They're demanding a response to something awful that's happened. They won't settle for non-action, no matter how hard or impossible it might seem. If we're passionate about Jesus, just like Mary was, and just like loads of people in the Bible were, we need to make a response. In the Message version of Mark 14, Jesus talks about his response to Mary pre-anointing his body for burial. He says, why are you giving her a hard time? She's just done something wonderfully significant for me. She did what she could when she could. I wonder what you will do in response to being passionate about Jesus, what you are doing. Will it be wonderfully significant? Mother Teresa had a famous saying to curious seekers of her work. It was, come and see. I wonder if someone were to come and see how we lived our lives day by day, moment by moment, whether they, what they would see. There's a guy called Shane Claiborne. I have read this. It was a really long time ago. But he says a really cool thing in it. He says that we should be Jesus with skin on. I wonder if someone met us tomorrow morning at work, whether they would see Jesus with skin on. Or would they be really looking at some cold floppy chips? That would that be more like our response to Jesus? I really hope that we are going to choose to be powerful and passionate people, and that we say yes to God and his plans in all their fullness. I just wanted to read to you a little bit from this book. It sounds like I can't read all the time, but I really don't. I go to bed. I would normally be in my pyjamas now, so it feels weird being fully dressed. I had to leave the kids in the bath on their own. But this book, I normally start reading like a page and then I fall asleep, or I've read it about 10 times and not taken any in. But this is quite good, this book. I read a little bit of it. What on Earth Am I Here For? By Rick Warren. And I'll just read you this bit. Intimate friendship with God is a choice, not an accident. You must intentionally seek it. Do you really want it more than anything? What is it worth to you? Is it worth giving up other things? Is it worth the effort of developing the habits and skills required? You may have been passionate about God in the past, but you've lost that desire. That was the problem of the Christians in Ephesus. They had left their first love. They did all the right things, but out of duty, not love. If you've been going through the motions spiritually, don't be surprised when God allows pain in your life. Pain is the fuel of passion. It energizes us with an intensity to change that we don't normally possess. C.S. Lewis said, pain is God's megaphone. It's God's way of arousing us from spiritual lethargy. Your problems are not punishment. They're wake-up calls from a loving God. God is not mad at you. He's mad about you. And he will do whatever it takes to bring you back into fellowship with him. But there is an easier way to reignite your passion for God. Start asking God to give it to you. And keep on asking until you have it. Pray this throughout your day. Dear Jesus, more than anything else, I want to get to know you. God told the captives in Babylon, when you get serious about finding me and you want it more than anything else, I'll make sure that you're not disappointed. There is nothing, absolutely nothing, more important than developing a friendship with God. It's a relationship that will last forever. Paul told Timothy, some of those people have missed the most important thing in life. They don't know God. Have you been missing out on the most important thing in life? You can do something about it starting now. Remember, it's a choice. It's your choice. You're as close to God as you choose to be. Should we pray? God, we just want to say that we choose to be close to you, Lord. I thank you for the example of Mary in the Bible. And we just pray, God, that this week you would help us to seek out moments where we can spend time with you and to reignite our passion for you so that we can go out and live our lives for you. Amen.